Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Coming up on the show, we talk to Simon Dixon of BankToTheFuture.com. But first, as always, it's time to hear from Stacy with the hottest headlines of the day.
Hey, Max. Well, it's only 1 week now until the Bitcoin halvening or halving. You know, there's so much controversy over whether you say halvening or halving. Anyway, that's only 1 week away. We're going to see quantitative hardening in the Bitcoin sector. In the meantime, in the real world of fiat, well, it's kind of fictional, really. But in the fictional world of fiat, you see lots and lots of quantitative easing, lots of Fed balance sheet expanding, lots of bailouts, and all sorts of shenanigans. But, you know, the king of fiat is none other than Warren Buffett. And this past weekend, we saw him basically capitulate. He's lost everything. He's down $54 billion in the first quarter. He sold all his airline stocks. He owned 10% of American United, Southwest, and Delta. He owned 10% of each of those, dumped them all at a huge loss. He bought them at the high, sold them at the bottom. So we're seeing a sea change in the whole monetary system.
Yeah, it's fascinating, this airline industry, because just a few weeks ago, people were talking about these genius airlines, the genius CEOs, and how Delta Airlines was positioned for massive growth. And Warren Buffett had these huge positions. Now on CNBC this morning, they're talking about, should airlines just be utilities and not be in the business of making profits? That there's too much risk in them for anyone to ever own shares again in an airline stock. They should be treated purely as government, highly regulated public service entities, like an energy utility. And that all happened in 2 months. So it's breathtaking, this turnaround, this pivot from a viable, cash-producing, profitable Warren Buffett darling to being relegated to the dustbin of being a utility.
Well, any nation needs transportation, especially, you know, for airlines and railroads and things like that. So it's not like you can have no airlines at all. So the UK is losing Virgin Atlantic, or at least there's allegations that they're not going to bail out Virgin Atlantic, and Richard Branson has been begging. But what do they do if both Virgin Atlantic and British Airways go under, right? They've got to rescue one of them because they need people to come in and out of the country once it reopens. But, you know, while Warren Buffett, right before he announced that he dumped all his shares, he said to the audience watching at home about this from the Berkshire Hathaway shareholder meeting on Yahoo Finance, he said, "I hope I've convinced you to bet on America." And then proceeds to say, "I dumped all my shares."
Yeah, another massive turnaround, another massive pivot. You know, I can't help but think this is part of the whole Bitcoin story, because Bitcoin is a mind-changing technology. Once you study it, you change the way you think about things. If you don't change the way you think and you're stuck in the past, you start making bad mistakes, because the future is here. It's Bitcoin. Buffett, of course, trash-talked Bitcoin, called it rat poison, and within a few months, he's taking a $50 billion loss. So I think people who try to outsmart Bitcoin and think they've got a better way to engineer the future end up with these massive, embarrassing losses. And with that, let's bring on the one, the only, Simon Dixon of BankToTheFuture.com. He's been in business for 10 years in this space, one of the earliest with Bank to the Future. Simon Dixon, Warren Buffett is now sitting on nearly $138 billion in cash, not a dime of that in gold or Bitcoin. Your thoughts?
Well, that's really interesting. I mean, Warren Buffett's whole investment philosophy was buy when others are fearful and sell when others are greedy. So I'm wondering whether he's just reached the age and time where he wants to do the sell, or whether he is actually joining the herds in selling right now, or maybe we are in a different market. So it's very strange that he would be asking people to bet on America and dumping when others are all dumping as well.
Of course, he also mentioned the Fed. He is kind of the king of fiat. He has his entire successful investing career started at the beginning of this whole fiat, global fiat experiment. And he's been very well connected to the Federal Reserve and has received many bailouts, essentially, especially in 2008 with all his holdings in insurance companies and things like that, and the banking sector. But, you know, that world is coming to an end, as he kind of pointed out. He said, we don't know what's going to happen with all this Fed money printing. But by the way, they didn't help me out this situation. This is why he dumped all his airline shares, is because the government stepped in, actually, rather than the Fed. The government stepped in and are demanding things like no share buybacks in exchange for this bailout, also demanding that they're not allowed to fire any workers until September. So we have that world of quantitative easing that has been, you know, basically our world for the past 10, 15 years. And now we have a world of quantitative hardening. What do you think is going to happen in the next week once we have the Bitcoin halving? And explain to the audience, first of all, what a Bitcoin halving or havening, I don't know how you pronounce it, but explain what it is and what this does to monetary policy in this day and age of trillions and trillions of dollars of free money printing.
Sure, yeah. So I always called it halving, but for somehow halvening has entered my vocabulary. I don't quite know where it came from. But Bitcoin halving refers to the fact that the monetary policy for Bitcoin is set in stone by Mass and Code, and it's audited by the largest supercomputer in the world of people verifying every single transaction. And so therefore, the monetary policy of Bitcoin is next to impossible to change. And therefore, it's predetermined. And the way that it works is it started with 50 Bitcoins being gifted to those who verify all the transactions that perform the role of bank or central bank. That's given to them every 10 minutes, what's known as a block reward. And every 4 years, the number of Bitcoins given away every 10 minutes halves. So 4 years later, after its inception, it went to 25 Bitcoins every 10 minutes, then 12 and a half Bitcoins every 10 minutes. And in the week ahead, it's going to be going to 6 1/4 Bitcoins every 10 minutes until eventually we hit all 21 million Bitcoins, and 18 million of them approximately have already been mined. So it's the fixed money supply. What I think is really interesting about this halving is that one could say that, you know, all of the people that are already in Bitcoin knew that halving was coming, and therefore it's factored into the price right now. But what I think is really interesting is in the era of, you know, ginormous quantitative easing on a scale bigger than what we've ever seen before for the last decade, pumping up stock markets, I think people are starting to educate themselves on and asking more questions, which I think brings people to Bitcoin that haven't been factored into the price yet, because the expected inflation is already factored into the price. But what happens when new people enter the market where it hasn't? So I don't expect, it's normally a non-event, the actual halving, but there's normally an increase leading up to it, then disappointment afterwards, and then that normally goes into a bull run several months later, after the halving, as people start to realize.
Right. And, you know, adoption rates in Bitcoin are increasing all the time, particularly in countries like Argentina and all over Latin America, where banking situation is in dire straits. And going back to the 2008 period, the bail-in in Cyprus spurred an enormous adoption curve in Bitcoin. And it looks like the banking system is once again on the precipice of some major failures. Would this then be maybe even more of an inducement to get people into Bitcoin, Simon?
Yeah, certainly. Bitcoin adoption is driven by three things, and new utility is always driven by three things. Firstly, people realizing that they need to own their own money. So when you have things like Cyprus bail-ins, people start to realize that their money at bank is at risk. It's also driven by people's desire to send money without censorship. So when people, like in Greece a while back, when they try to go to an ATM and they can't withdraw their cash, then they realize that there's censorship in money. If they try to contribute to someone in Zimbabwe that's experiencing really troubled times at the moment, some charity or something, and then they realize the country's sanctioned and they're not allowed to send it to there, Bitcoin becomes something that they start to realize they could use. And also what we talked about already, you know, excessive money printing or quantitative easing leads to, you know, an increase in the supply. And that's yet another use case. So the one that we're seeing right now that would be driving adoption is the whole understanding that we might be headed to deflation and hyperinflationary environment and people looking at how they're going to position themselves based upon that.
It's Double Down with Max and Stacey.
Oh yeah, it's a new show on Sputnik Radio.
Certainly, Max and I have received a lot of feedback around the world as we see the situation in Lebanon with hyperinflation there and people being locked out of their bank accounts. We see this in Argentina as well. And Brazil is also having a massive inflationary situation there. Their currency has fallen hugely. Mexico and Colombia, their pesos have fallen by over 20% against the dollar. So, you know, against the dollar, this is kind of the real situation that's been going on for the past 20 years as the U.S. racks up national debt, deficits, all that sort of stuff. And now we have a trade war with China as China has risen in the past 20 years since they entered the WTO. You know, we're seeing now, and this is a topic I've seen you discuss largely, you know, on your YouTube channel and on your Twitter account, you're seeing this notion of a sovereign cryptocurrency. Now, interestingly, Vladimir Putin of Russia in 2018, he did this interview, which has just seen the light of day for the English-speaking world. But he said there's no such thing as a sovereign cryptocurrency because they're borderless. What do you think in this terms of the sovereign cryptocurrency, will China actually launch this crypto yuan they keep on talking about? And does it change anything?
Yes, certainly. Every single country in the world is going to release their digital currency because they need a new monetary tool. They've lost all their monetary policy tools. Interest rates are gone. You know, quantitative easing is maxed out. We've had the massive fiscal stimulus. And so they need a new tool. And the only new tool that they've got left is actually issuing a currency directly either by the central bank or the government. What that does is it sidesteps the banking system. So whereas with fractional reserve banking, money is created every time you issue a loan, with a central bank digital currency, you get an injection of debt-free money. So it essentially allows you to send the banking system bankrupt and replace everybody's money with a new central bank digital currency. The only issue with that central bank digital currency, while it's debt-free and it's not fractionally reserved, is that it will come with more infringements upon your personal freedom, liberty, and privacy than you've ever seen before. As they start to connect it to your currency, will then be connected to your passport, which will be then connected to automated tax collection, which will then be connected to whether you're allowed to exit your house after a lockdown, which will be connected to whether you have a vaccine or not. And so this central bank digital currency, you see it all rolling out in China right now. The amount of privacy infringing and freedom infringing policies that come with a central bank digital currency are really going to be driving people to want to have a digital currency that you can own, spend, and the money supply can't be manipulated.
Now, Bitcoin, of course, was born at the end of 2008 as the financial crisis was sweeping across the world. That was when the white paper was published, and then it was first mined in January of 2009. It was embedded in the Coinbase, was, you know, Chancellor on brink of second bailout of banks. We were all around back then, and of course, it was quite breathtaking back then, the interventions by the Fed and the governments to rescue the financial system. This is even more breathtaking today. We see, you know, the U.S. deficit, I remember when it passed a trillion, and we thought, wow, that's amazing, 1 trillion. This year it is apparently going to hit close to 4 trillion. So how does this spill over into the monetary system, and what do you see for Bitcoin going forward?
Yeah, well, governments have no choice but to chuck everything at the financial system. So the financial system should have been reformed in 2008, but instead quantitative easing was used to prop up financial markets and save the system. Now we're at the end of a major debt cycle, and bringing it all full circle, when you have people like Warren Buffett who have traditionally invested into markets like this, and you know gurus like Ray Dalio saying that we're end of a debt cycle, we're seeing that we are essentially at a new phase in monetary policy, which is, you know, much like the post-war Bretton Woods negotiations. At the end of this, we're going to have to see some serious monetary reform, new negotiations, currency wars, and a grab for power. And I think Bitcoin could actually become a tool for central banks to use in order to gain more power, add it to their reserves, and leave some of the incumbent central banks behind.
All right. Well, breathtaking. And that's going to do it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Keiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. I'd like to thank our guest, Simon Dixon of Banks of the Future. Until next week, bye, y'all.